What is good? I'm Scott from Koenig. Rich is here too, and we got a good one for you. We're going to be talking about some sim racing stuff, and our guest is no stranger to sim racing or real racing.
Yeah, so we have Guillermo Cabrera here with us, also known as GC Drifting on Instagram and other social platforms.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, so you know, for people who don't know who you are, tell them a little bit about yourself, or you know, how also you're kind of intertwined with Koenig in general too.
Well, my name is Guillermo Cabrera. I started sim racing around 3 years ago. Got in really big into competitive side in the sim racing, and then started doing content creating for Instagram for Assetto Corsa. Was able to meet a group of guys, Robert Thorne, Dan Stuckey, and Casey Cole, and work alongside with them in the sim side of replicating their cars, laser scanning the Koenig hypergrams, the freeforms, and building their one-to-one replica on Assetto Corsa, and doing a bunch of driving and training with the boys.
Yeah. So Casey, Dan, and Robert are all drivers for us in Formula Drift, and you're actually part of Robert's team. You're the coach for Robert's Formula Drift Pro team, right?
Yes, sir. I coach Robert on the sim, and I coach him while we're at the track in person, and I'm also his spotter and a spotter for Josh Love Drifting.
All right. I have so many questions. I don't even know where to start.
Right?
Let's start here. So
that's Robert's car. You see that?
I'm with you.
Guillermo, like, or you know, we got a couple of videos also of like B-roll going over some of your Instagram clips on the screen if people watch on YouTube.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so they can actually see you with the same clips that you put on in social, and we're just watching one of the clips right now of you being a chase car in Robert's ASM build. Really sick.
Oh, so phenomenal.
My question is, all right, so we say, you know, you're coaching. Now, before you really got big into sim racing, did you do a lot of competitive drifting yourself?
Not competitive. I was just more of drifting like for fun.
Okay.
In 2010, I went to a school in Ohio. It was called University of Northwestern Ohio.
Okay.
I went in their high performance program, their automotive program. And at that point in time is when I first bought my first 240. It was a 89 hatch. And at that point, I had my friends Jason and Nick. They assisted me with doing an RB25 Neo swap.
Nice.
And I used that vehicle to kind of learn about developing a car, and I built it at school, and I drifted on their skid pads, and I went to a couple of tracks around Ohio, and that's kind of how I started with drifting.
Right. So you had drifting experience before the simulator. And the reason I'm only trying to preface that is that we're starting to see more and more, you know, whether you look at the Brand Sorensens or, you know, even some of the guys in the pro-am level kind of learning to drift in a simulator and then making their way to an actual vehicle. So I'm just trying to place
that's even like Novak. Novak was originally just sim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, and for, you know, he's a pro driver now.
Yeah. At the time when I kind of got into it, I think the sim was a, really wasn't the biggest thing for me. So I had to kind of, learn the hard way, kind of put the car together and kind of start in a parking lot and then, you know, do little donuts here and there and then kind of work my way up to it where I feel like now, you know, you could kind of just start with a sim and then learn everything that everyone else in, let's say, 10 years ago had to learn. You can learn it in a very short period of time.
Man, that's crazy. So when you say learn it the hard way, you got to explain it to me. So let me, I don't want to make myself sound like so old that I don't understand like how to use a computer, right? That's not what it is. But, you know, there is this thing for me that I've never been a gamer, right? And because of that, my thought process, you know, like I've always been I always liked to race, like in a hobbyistic sense. Like, you know, I did drag racing back in the day, but like, I don't, you know, well, I did some shootouts. I was never a, you know, professional driver by any scope of the means. I've done some autocross. I've certainly done a little bit of road racing, and I love to go to the track, but you know, I'm not a gamer, and I certainly don't even know the first step about, other than reading some good articles or watching YouTube and kind of consuming these videos, what to even do. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I've driven a few simulators and, you know, a few Fanatec rigs. And the one thing that that escapes me is that I feel like the one part that I can't get to really feel real in my peripheral is the speed. So when I'm, you know, let's say I'm coming into a turn or something like that, and I go to, you know, brake, I feel like I'm always constantly later than I should be because I don't feel exactly how fast I'm going. And then I lose a lot of that in-car feel because I think that's what my body is used to expecting. So, when you say going from a real car is the hard way, like, you kind of went that same route. Did you have the same issues when you first got onto a sim?
When I first got onto a sim, I started with a belt-driven wheel. Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit of a kind of learning curve compared to, like, the real car. So I'm used to my 240. It was on cut knuckles back then, six caster. So it self-steered pretty well.
Yeah.
And when I first came to the sim, it was adapting to not having all the feel of the inertia of the car.
Yeah.
And then adapting to where I had to learn to kind of use my eyes as my guidance instead of using the feel of the car and when it's moving back and forth. So I had to switch really the way I drive completely, actually, instead of where I would feel the car coming out to where now I actually drive with my eyes and I look where I need to go and let everything else happen. And I don't think about it and just focus with my eyes where I need to go. And it was a little bit of a learning curve because of the style of the wheel. But the minute I got into what's called a direct drive, the steering felt very, very at home and very similar to what my real car felt like. So it took me about a week after I got the direct drive to get kind of adapted to not feeling the car and having to just look at the screen and look on the track where I needed to go and where I needed to be.
So when you say you got to teach yourself to drive with your eyes, do you feel that now when you get into a car, do you feel that you're still driving with your eyes primarily?
Yes, actually, I think that's what has made me that much better of a driver. I think that's really the opportunity that the simulator brings is that you change the style of your driving to instead of feeling where the car is going, you're physically looking and you're using your eyes to identify certain things and looking ahead compared to where in the past, I would just kind of feel where the car was at and flow with that and kind of just let the car do its thing instead of now where I'm really clinical on where I'm looking and positioning myself because of where my eyes are looking.
Now, do you feel that that's the big, like if you had to separate things into very layman's terms, do you feel that that's really where that advantage comes from some of the people that are coming from the sim developed skill into a real car is that they're kind of looking first and then bringing the other aspects of their driving and their, you know, kind of technique in secondary?
I do think that's one of the main things that they're bringing. Having the muscle memory of the steering would be the second. Is just knowing what the wheel is going to do prior of it actually doing it and just where you're positioning your hands for the handbrake or shifter. So I think that's the secondary. But I think what's actually scaling someone's driving is learning how to use their eyes the best they can do when they're on the track. It's what I've learned to make me the fastest.
Wow. That's interesting.
Well, so I have a few questions in this regard is that, like, you know, there's a level of ignorance between Scott and myself when it comes to sim rigs because neither of us have one and haven't really spent too much time on a sim rig, either one of us. But, you know, for like the average person, because sims are becoming so popular now, like, do you think that this is kind of like a pay to win type of thing on like if you don't have a direct drive system or steering wheel or whatever, like is it even going to translate as well? Or if you start, like you said, you start on a belt?
Belt drive.
Like do those people have the same kind of translation into the real life driving as opposed to people who have the better equipment?
I would say that it doesn't differ that much because you still grasp the full understanding of what you need to do. Mm-hmm. It would just be the differences of, you know, your belt-driven wheel might have a little bit less self-steer than the actual car that you're driving or comparing to a direct drive. So I think every movement that you would be doing is basically identical. It's just the small self-steering would be just different, but everything else would be the same. Yes.
Does a direct drive system allow you to enable kind of to replicate kind of the Ackerman adjustment to the point where you get that self-steering, like how much self-steering you have?
The Ackerman and like, let's say adjustments on the car, that would be in the actual physics of the car.
Yep.
The direct drive just gives you a direct input to what the tires on the actual 3D model is doing.
Oh.
So it has a less latency comparing to a belt driven or a gear driven.
It
essentially gives you the same power steering feel as what your real car would.
Let me ask you a question. So maybe like, let's say a summary for me, I've talked about developing a sim rig for, has to be the last 3 or 4 years, right?
me too, pretty much.
but you know, and so here's my scenario. I'm a guy that used to like to race quite a bit. I like to do a bunch of different type of racing. I know how to drift only in a Hoonigan style, which we're not going to call drifting, but I know how to
make a car spin.
Well, I know how to circles. Flirt with the envelope of, you know, grip and just a little bit of loss, right? And there's things I like to do, but, you know, as I get older, as I have kids, I don't have the time to go to the track like I did. Like, if I built a car, and I love building cars, so, like, that part's appealing to me. But if I built a car and said, hey, this is going to be my dedicated track car in whatever sense, I would get to the track maybe 3 times a year, and that would be a hard push. So if I'm coming from that perspective, if I was to spend, let's say, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 and I build myself a really great sim, I'm not talking about with motion or all the crazy bells and whistles, but
a good Fanatec
system, good realistic, you know, screens or VR goggles or whatever it may be, good feedback, like, do you feel that like I could use this as, I don't want to say a replacement for going to the track, but could I use it in a sense of a good replacement for getting that feeling of like I'm really racing and still picking up the knowledge and the skill set that comes along with that seat time?
I think it definitely gives you that ability. Having a, let's say, a track racer TR80 or something with it, like an aluminum extrusion rig or a Fanatec CSL DD. It's a good way to stay on form. I wouldn't call it a replacement,
right,
but it's something to just stay in that form, stay knowledgeable about the things that you were doing with, you know, your racing, drag racing or drifting, and kind of still be in connection with that side of your, you know, your racing.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. It connects you to the point where I feel you can go from the sim to real life, and as long as you have the mindset and the confidence in yourself, it translates identical.
Wow. Well, so that makes me think of a question of like say for myself, right? I don't have any real racing driving experience. I mean, messing around on the streets or whatever. That's about it. And you know, so if you were a person that, like, say I was younger, I was like a, you know, teenager and just got my license or whatever, and I said, hey, I really want to start drive in. I want to become a serious racer. And if you had like a low budget and do you think it would make more sense? Like if you had to give someone advice, like a young person advice, would you say, hey, it makes more sense for you to spend that small budget on a sim rig and get your seat time in and kind of figure it out? Or if you have the option, use that for a budget race build and go from there.
I think at the point we're at right now, building a budget race car is, you know, it would be anywhere probably from 6,000 to 10 grand. Mm-hmm. You know, you could get like a basic G35 or 350Z, and then, you know, you got to do coilovers, angle kit, dual calipers for an e-brake, wheels, tires. And that's just to, you know, to get you ready for your event, where you could spend, on the low side, you could spend around $1,500 and just get the direct drive wheelbase and get some Thrustmaster pedals or something to keep you on a lower end. And you can still get that same feel as a real car, and you can practice on the sim and put down a lot more seat time than what you would be able to do in a budget race car. And you could really catch up to those other guys that have 5-10 years of experience, mm-hmm. just by sitting on your simulator for anywhere from 6 months to a year.
Well, do you think it still evens out, even if you were a person that had no computer, you didn't already have a gaming computer or whatever, and you needed everything from scratch? You need to get a computer, you need to get a monitor, you need to get a chair, you need to get everything from scratch, and versus still the same question with a budget race build.
So when I first started, my PC was $800. I got a 32-inch monitor from Walmart that was $192. And then I bought the Simmagic Direct Drive, which mm-hmm. was my first DD, and that was around $800. And then I had Thrustmaster pedals and Thrustmaster shifter. So realistically, it was roughly a little bit under $2,500, $3,000, which at that price, you're really only getting maybe a car or a shell.
Yeah.
So it really gives you the time to be able to invest, where if you bought a car, you have to invest a lot more time into prepping your car and then working to get to the track, where you can, you know, as a sim, you can just come home, sit down, hop on with your buddies and just grind laps and learn. And I really think that it's what's going to start paving the way for the next generation of professional drivers, because I really think when you learn on a simulator and then you go drive in real life, I feel like you're at an advantage when you're driving on the sim compared to some other guys that are just driving in real life and they're not investing their time into a simulator also.
That's interesting. You know, it's funny. It's like I've been kind of working with race teams for so long that I saw that progression happen where you started to see some of the younger drivers start to get into competitive drifting and things like that, and their main experience was like in the sim, right? They would come out of using a simulator and go to their first event and go from the first couple runs just trying to feel things out, you know, but by the end of the day they're linking the course. And and then you've kind of seen that, and then, you know, at first I remember some of the drivers kind of scoffing at that, like, that's interesting, that's not going to be the norm. And now I think you're starting to see most of the drivers, when they've been doing it for a long time, kind of learn new courses and use the simulator in a sense of just kind of getting themselves warmed in a sense for the different tracks or layouts or things like that.
Most definitely. It's really incredible to see a driver practice on a track and then go there in real life and actually be able to replicate the lap that they did on the simulator in real life.
Yeah, that's
so in terms of Assetto Corsa, which I don't play, so I don't have a ton of knowledge on it, but, you know, I know that you guys run an incredible list of mods to get the kind of same
visuals and
everything to make it translate as well from the game to to real life in terms of, I know when we spoke in New Jersey, you were telling me on how everything about Robert's car is to spec when he goes and practices on the sim, and it'll be, you know, you were saying down to these tires, everything's correct up in, you know, to real life.
Yeah, so I worked alongside with Dan and Casey a couple months ago on developing the GT radials. We spent about 3 weeks of going back and forth of me messing with the tire data so that we could get a tire that felt and kind of represented what the real 295 GT radials that, you know, a bunch of the guys in the pro are using. Mm-hmm. Robert's car, I worked alongside with him measuring his suspension, so that we were able to get the most accurate based off the measurements that we were able to get. And Robert being the guru who he is, I was able to get a bunch of like the coilover valving, a bunch of the spring rates and everything to get his car as dialed as we possibly could. And he tells me I have never had the opportunity to drive it, but he tells me it's perfect. So mm-hmm. it's awesome to be able to have those guys so that I could work with them and do those things to get the cars driving as good as they do on the sim.
That's insane. Well, I got one question.
Go ahead. Good.
So what I don't know though is like, so you get all the spring rates and everything and whatever, and you met all the measurements, whatever you need. So then how do you actually implement that into the game?
So in the game, they have a data file.
Okay.
In the data file, you would go in there and they have what's called a suspension INI. And the measurements in there are in meters. Mm-hmm. So you would convert the measurements that we got for each arm and then implement them into there. And then we would get our caster settings. I would adjust the caster and based off like caster, trail, and KPI. And that's how we would get a...
Is that crazy, Scott?
So that's, you know, crazy. Let's dumb it down for that's me for crazy. A second, right? Yeah. Now, when I say dumb it down, like, I'm very used to things like tuning, right? Like, I've tuned a lot of cars. I know how to tune standalone and stuff like that. So, like, I have a knowledge of this. So what you're saying to me is, in a very similar sense of dialing and matching calibrations, you're able to open up a file and just, like, without knowing a lot of coding, right, you're able to basically say, hey, like, you know, my, you know, the length of my lower control arm is this many millimeters, and you just replace the number. And then the length of, let's say my camber settings are set at this, and, you know, my toe adjustment is this, and you're able to get the game to recognize how that is and give the feedback into the steering wheel the same way.
Yes, based off Robert's information, right? Like I'm saying, I've never had the opportunity to drive his car.
Right.
My G35, I measured my Part Shop Max kit, and I, with the help of Chris Witalski, the guy from VDC, he helped me bring it into the game. And that one, I can say it feels identical. I could go out and drive my G and come back on my sim, and it feels to the T. But yes, not much coding goes into it. Because it's weird, every vehicle in Assetto Corsa has what's called a data file, and then there it's just all measurements.
So let's say I have a 350Z, right? So let's say I want to recreate roughly my car to an extent in 350Z, my 350Z in Assetto Corsa. I start out with a base 350Z, right? Mm-hmm. That data file is there, like you're saying.
Yes, sir.
And now I want, let's say I have... Like, I have a twin turbo kit installed. I have different suspension. Where do I start? How do I start? I mean, you don't have to give me the play-by-play, but give me... How do I start to increase the realism of my car into this game to make it like that?
So we'd start off with your engine package. You got a twin turbo. We'd start with your dyno graph. We'd take your dyno graph from real life, and we'd hop on this website. It's called dynograph.ac. And in there, we would replicate your dyno graph and your map from your real car into the game so that we could have your exact engine and torque.
It makes so much sense.
And then after that, you know, depending on, let's say, if you have cut knuckles or 25 millimeters extended lowers, etc., we just, in the suspension INI, we'd have the car in Assetto in the custom showroom, and we'd look at the suspension aligned to data. And then via there, we would make our small adjustments on extending the lowers and making different placements of your tire rod location to get your angle kit.
Okay. And if I don't have an angle kit, but let's say on a 350Z, they have those like, you know, bump stop things.
The tire rod spacers.
Yep. You could, whatever. So I could put that information in too, and again, come up with a replication.
Yes, you can do the offset spacers that would offset your wheels a little bit and give you, you know, that extra 5 to 10 degrees of steering angle that you would have.
Yeah,
yes,
that's,
sir.
That's crazy. So
it seems like such a handicap to take the time and learn how to do all this stuff, because I'm sure the you know, the results are priceless. I mean, that's
crazy.
Well,
the fact that you can repeat them without ever having to spend money on tires, gas, tolls, wear and tear in a car, stuff like that, I would imagine that's really... And the fact that you can do it in your boxer shorts at 3 a.m.
Yep.
Yeah, with a cheeseburger. Hey. Sorry, I was enhancing the vision for myself.
That's a good time.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
So so let's run this down. Let's put together, if you don't mind, if you'll humor me, I want to put together three different levels of hypothetical sims that we can get at a certain price level and still be able to feel like we're still getting some realistic feedback, right? So level one, I think, like you said, I think a fair number is $1,500. You already said that. You said, hey, spend the money on a CSL, a Fanatec CSL, DD, and go for some Thrustmaster pedals and shifter. Yeah?
Yes, sir.
What about the... what about like a handbrake? Do I have to?
Oh, the handbrake. You normally at a budget. I used an eBay one. It was $90. It was a potentiometer based handbrake, and it worked phenomenal. It lasted me 3 years before I went with the load cell Husenbelt.
Okay, and then all right. So then from there, what kind of computer do I need to successfully run? A set of course and have enough frame rate that, let's say, I can run. I don't want to say three monitors, but one big curved monitor, right?
Yeah, you could do a single curved.
Single curve? You could do it. The specs for a Seto are very lenient. I used to run a 6700K Intel with a GTX 1080, and I ran VR and my 49 single screen. So it's not too bad when it comes to your PC.
At what resolution?
And that was at a 1920 by 1080.
So, like, if I get, like, let's say, you know, a lot of these computers come in now. I don't know a ton about computers, so forgive me if I sound super ridiculous.
Yeah, but I could translate.
But let's say I have a decent, you know, i5, the equivalent to the AMD
Ryzen
stuff, right?
Yeah.
I have, like, the Ryzen 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, and I run, like, let's say 16 gigs of memory. Is that enough to...
Well, here's a question. What kind of GPU are you running right now, Guillermo?
At the moment, I'm running a EVGA FTW3 3080 water cooled.
Oof. 38. Oh, so it's a pretty beast. And EVGA is like, that's what I run too for graphics cards, and it's the best.
Yeah, they're my favorite.
I have a MacBook.
How do you know how many VRAM gigs there is on that?
I think on this one, on the 3080, it's 16.
16 is a lot. My God, that's a lot of video RAM. Anyways, okay, so you have a pretty beefy setup, and then so do you, like, I still have a 1080 Ti, and do you know, like, you know, I would be completely fine running a set of Corsa, but if you were a person that had a little more dated GPU, like a 980 or something, like, are they okay, or?
Yeah, like my buddy, I helped a buddy transfer from Forza to Assetto Corsa, and I sent him a super budget PC. I think it had a GTX 980 in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like integrated to the motherboard, and it ran Assetto Corsa with 60 frames and about 20 people in a game.
Wow, that's good.
It really starts getting heavy on your PC when you start driving with other guys that have like liveries and replica skins that are 4K and 8K. That's really where it starts to get heavy on your PC. But Assetto Corsa, with a very budget PC, you can run it. You could even run it off a laptop.
Can you lower textures or something like that in the game to just kind of blur out those details so you can run at a higher rate?
Yes. If you're looking at like optimizing your frames, you could definitely get, because Assetto has gotten to the point where they got this like hyper realism setting called Pure. And it lets you, it makes the game look incredibly real, but you can run it without that and change a couple settings in there, and it would run a with a basic PC for sure.
So would you say secondary to kind of that quote unquote budget area would be, let's say, well, what would you say?
Secondary, I would say you're looking anywhere from, you know, 3,000 to 5,000.
Well, geez, that's secondary.
You know, you're starting to kind of get where you're trying to have pedals that kind of feel like a race
pedals?
Car.
Yeah.
Yeah, like pedals like from a real car. Because that's really the big difference when you go from the Thrustmaster to, let's say, the Simagic or Husenvel or V&M. Mm-hmm. They really gives you that immersion feel with the pedals and the handbrake and the shifter. So 3,500 to 5K, you're looking at around like the Husenvel pedals or the V&Ms. And that those a little different because they go from being potentiometer to load cell base. So it goes from everything being based off load.
And that's like the Fanatec pedals that would be like the inverted.
Yeah, it's like the inverted V3s. Those are load cell. So that's kind of where that jump goes. It's just a different style of how they're read and stuff.
Nice. And so now we're shooting above that. This is where you're probably putting in the full motion and kind of adding a lot of the kind of ancillary things onto it to be able to really start to make the feel that much better, right?
Yeah, I would say like your level three rig, you know, where you're trying to really, you know, get everything out of sim racing, you're looking anywhere from 10,000 to 30,000, where you're starting to get into the, let's say, the next level motion rigs or just a bunch of crazy motion rigs. I have a guy that I train, his name on Instagram, Augmented Racing. You should see some of his videos. He has a $30,000 motion rig that replicates everything like his real car.
Max will probably pull it up on the screen for us, actually. So that'll be
Yeah, that'd be insane.
But yeah, go on.
But it's just really, really crazy what you can get into when you start looking at all the high end stuff.
What do you think about those the platforms that like, you know, do the, I guess like the, you know, the actual motion when you're driving and stuff, and you know, people have like the fans going so it simulates wind and whatnot?
I think it makes the sim driving a lot harder when you have all that other, you know, attributes to, you know, the motion to move you left and right.
But so like harder in a good way, as in if you were really like harder in the sense that like you're obviously competing with some other things, or harder in a way that it doesn't translate as well to a real experience.
Harder as you have more elements to fight with, you know, so it makes it more, that much more, you know, immersive and closer to a real car. So that's because I personally think when you're just sitting at your rig and driving with no movement, mm-hmm. you can kind of get in a very relaxed state and you're just driving, having fun. Where like you have the motion rig for Joe, you have to really kind of be on top of it because you got, you know, a rig that physically throwing you around, replicating the exact feel of what you would be getting thrown around in a real drift car.
My God.
Yeah, those setups are insane. We got one running right now, and they're just incredible. You know, so I when we spoke in New Jersey, you were telling me that you did a couple drifting events in real life, I guess, in your G35, I guess, right?
No, actually, I was able to compete four rounds of Full Lock Drift Pro-Am with the help of Dan, Casey, Robert, Josh, and Nick Geminis. I was able to compete in the first three rounds in Nick's S13 coupe. It's a S13 coupe a nitrous VQ power in it. It was full part shop max kit. It was an awesome time. The first round I had a little bit of difficulties because the coilover on the right front was bent and we didn't know that. So it was having a really tough time with the steering. So I wasn't able to qualify that round, but I came back round two a couple days before the event. I put in a lot of work and got the car 100%, and I was able to secure a second place for that Pro-Am
in
the car. So
it was,
thank you. It blows my mind because I've never drove the car. It's really been a few months since I've actually got real life seat time, and I was able to wake up, come over there, hop in a car, and with less than like 20 laps on the track, and in a car that I've never really driven a lot, I was able to secure a podium against really, really good guys and a bunch of guys with, you know, what I thought were incredibly like high level pro-am cars, and I was in a somewhat street car. So it was a lot of fun, and honestly, I give it to the simulator because it's what has been able to give me the ability to go out there and be as good as I am behind the wheel.
Something tells me that after this podcast, I may be about $4,500 lighter in the pocket.
DM me. I'll help you out.
All right.
I got a couple last questions, and one would be in response to the drifting event that you did. So, like, you said that it was a couple months before, since you had actual seat time. You know, when you were on the track in the S chassis, like, how did your body react to actually pulling G's and, like, you know, actually having, like, that's the one thing you don't get on the sim. Like, you're actually going to get that kind of inertia and just kind of, you know, pull. So, you know, how difficult did you find it to adjust to that when you were on the track?
It was actually quite crazy, because when I hopped in that car, it's like I was saying earlier, nothing affected me. I just initiated, first time ever getting in the car, first lap out. The guys were like, take it easy, you know, go feel it out. My first lap, I went out, clutch kicked in, flicked it in, handbraked, and I was like, just started looking where I needed to go, and I was just flooring it. I really didn't feel that the G's or inertia kind of mess with me. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe I was just so focused, where I was just hyper focusing on where I needed to go and where I needed to place the vehicle, that I never thought about it.
That's sick.
It's really crazy. It's like, I go back to saying it's, you know, it's really on how you go to the track that day and the confidence and mindset that you bring. It's really on how your driving goes. You know, you need to be positive and, you know, think that you're going to do well. And that's kind of how every round that I've been at the pro-am, where I've been in a car that I've never really driven, I just thought in a positive mindset, thought that I was going to do well, and just focused and just drove the wheels off the car.
That's awesome.
So,
man,
let me ask you a question. So and now we're probably getting into too much about me, and
it's okay,
but like, no, sorry, I get my hardware set up, I buy a computer that's capable of running a set of course, I download the game.
Can you tell Scott wants a sim?
No, I know what a sim is.
Don't say, can you tell you want a sim?
Oh, yeah. I want one. But I have one. Like, that's not. Yeah. But anyhow, so bottom line is, so once I get this, you know, I get everything installed and I get into the game, how do I start to make that game, like, improve the realism of the game? How do I start to get things in and get, you know, and get everything set up so that it feels better and the game starts to behave better? I heard the term modifications. I want to use that.
So, yeah, so when you get the game, you just buy the game off of Steam or whatever you buy it off of, or whatever, it's like the base game with no mods. So, yeah, so G, I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, so the base game you would get off Steam, and then you would, you know, either search on a website for mods, or you would, you know, my recommendation is subscribing to the Sideways Society Patreon, where I, myself, you know, specifically, you know, work with the guys in there one-on-one, and I walk you through getting all the cars, getting your wheel set up, you know, anything you need with a set of course. I'm like the concierge. I kind of walk you through, help you, give guidance, you know, help with driving, and anything you need with setting up.
That's awesome. And so, like, you get into the Sideways Society, and let's say people say, hey, I want to replicate this wheel, right? And could, like, is that something you do for the people? You'll say, hey, yeah, like, let me do it.
As in, like, wheel, as in, like,
the car wheel. Like, let's say they say, hey, I want to,
like, dude, we take it quite serious. You know, when we're replicating models and stuff, you know, like, I have a buddy, Mike, he's got a 350Z, and I took the time to get in making the same wheel for his real car in the game, so that when he's driving his 350Z in the game, it gives him that immersion that he's in his real car with his wheel, his shifter, his handbrake. We have a couple modelers in our team, and that's who we kind of work with to get those things done, so that everyone can feel at home.
So you guys use like what, like STL files, or you end up taking like 3D, you know, 3D scans of these wheels, and you just implement the files into the game?
So how Assetto works is it's based off a CAN5 file. And we extract that CAN5 file and then bring it into 3ds Max. Where in 3ds Max, we replicate the wheel with in the 3D program, and then we'll export that into what's called KS Editor. And KS Editor allows you to apply textures and implement it into Assetto Corsa.
Wow.
So that when you extract the CAN5 of the vehicle, you get that same wheel and the same animation and everything in car in the game.
That's absolutely nuts.
This results in computer savvy, software savvy drivers that, you know, like they have like so much knowledge on all this stuff. It just, they have, you know, it's crazy that you learn all this stuff and you gain so many skills just from pure interest in trying to play a game and drive.
And then there's me that's like, where's the start button on the computer? It's got to be around here somewhere.
No, you're not like that. No, he's exaggerating. Scott's pretty good with the computer.
I used to be the same, man. I give it to this one gentleman. His name's Jack. He's literally the guy that showed me everything in Assetto Corsa. I mean, I wouldn't be the driver I am if I wouldn't had the opportunity to drive with him. He's a really good driver, and everything I know is kind of because he taught me it. So, you know, that's kind of how it is, and, you know, we're all here to help.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel, and I'll do this in closing, I think.
Yeah.
But, like, do you ever feel, let's say hypothetically, you know, you have a bunch of FD pro drivers, right? And they're together in the game and they're driving some courses together, doing some battles or whatever. And somebody, let's say like Rich, who has never been in a car, doesn't know anything, he happens to somehow get invited to this group to drive. And he's a really great driver. You know, he's put a lot of sim time in. And he's able to like kind of manage with these dudes and hang out and whatever. Is it one of those things where like would those pro drivers be like, yeah, this dude probably would lay some stuff down, or is it not at all the respect level from the game to the level there?
Oh, I think they really hold the drivers that drive sim at a really high level. There's been multiple occasions where Dan, Casey, Robert, or Josh, or Jeff, or Andy have been driving with us in the Sideways Society Patreon, and they have spoken with one of the kids that is incredibly talented on the sim, and they've been like, "Hey, do you drive?" And they're like, "No, I've never driven a real car," and they've been like, "Wow, dude, you would." They hold them up really high. They think that they would incredible. Yeah, it makes me happy just to know that it's kind of like that now, where, you know, real drivers are holding these simulator drivers at such a high standard, and that they actually know that they have the capability of driving a real car.
That is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it just, if that's not a testament to how far
this has all come.
This is, well, you say how far it's come.
It's coming.
But that's my point.
I stand corrected.
You're right on the cusp of this thing turning into a mainstream deal in the sense of it's what you do simultaneously while you're drifting or before.
But my point, what I was trying to say earlier, is that not only that, but now these kids, if they want to get serious, they're going to go out there and go take measurements on their car. They're going to learn how to take scans or whatever it is and learn the softwares, and they're going to get all these different things.
Yes.
From real life to the game.
But let me just go one step further.
You create a whole bunch of Guillermos, and we have a fleet of incredible drivers out there.
you're missing one big thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying something when people are of driving age.
Yeah.
What happens when my 10-year-old decides to hop into a sim that I built for me to play with and get seat time and enjoy?
Yeah, he'll be in prospect by the time he's 16.
Well, but that's what I'm saying is, do you think that this is going to lower the age of drivers, like, consistently?
Yeah, I think so.
I totally agree. I think it's something we've been seeing in Europe for the last like 5 years. You've been seeing all these little guys, you know, 10, 12 years old, driving these 800 horsepower plus pro cars and driving them just like the professionals who are, you know, our age now.
Well, my favorite, I like watching Piotr Vizek's his candy machine, right?
Candy That's man. Yes, his YouTube.
Yep. Yeah. So his YouTube channel and his son, he's put him into these cars multiple times. I think he built him a Miata a year or two ago. And it's like it's a blast for me to see that happening. I just I don't know. I'm gonna have to get my credit card out because I feel like it's gonna have to happen way sooner than later. Now I'm too pumped.
Well, definitely, you gotta come join us, Scott.
Honestly, you gotta happen.
You can log on every single night and race with him and Robert
every single night.
They do. That's for real.
You know what's gonna happen? I'm gonna have to get into one of those situations where like Koenig's gonna downhill because I work less and drive more.
Every night when I leave the office, I go, "Good night, Scott." It's gonna be him on the sim break, be like, "Yeah, I'm gonna be late tonight."
I'm gonna get the here.
Oh man,
that's awesome.
I'm gonna poke into his office in our late night, Scott. He's gonna be like, "Yep,
yeah, you're just gonna see the light." Well, listen, I thank you so much for taking the time to come out here.
Yes.
And give us the knowledge. But I also I wish you and the team just all the luck. It's been a great season so far,
and a big congratulations on Utah. Robert top 16. You know, he's driving really well, and you know, awesome.
Yes, man. I thank you guys for the opportunity, man.
It's our pleasure.
It was an honor to be on here and give you guys just some insight.
Yeah, of course. And then anyone who's watching, make sure to follow Guillermo on social. It's GC Drifting. Max will pull it up on the screen. And Sideways Society, if you guys join the Patreon, right?
Yeah, I mean,
for sure, man.
Man, soon I might be there taking out all their cars in virtual land.
Yeah, I have a final question I just had to ask. My question to you, G, is going to be, when are we going to see you in Pro Spec?
That's a tough one.
I know.
I'll keep it real with you guys. G's business hasn't been doing the best this year due to fuel prices, because I'm in the logistics business of transporting produce goods in reefer trailer. So I'm hoping if everything goes well next year, we'll be in Prospect 2025.
That's awesome.
That's what's up.
So.
Hopefully well, let us know, man. Let us know. Definitely, we know people with wheels.
Definitely, man. No, you guys are the best. I love your guys' wheels, man. Thank you guys for everything, for real.
Thank you, man.
Rich, appreciate you, boys.
Awesome,
appreciate
man. It. Take care, man.
Man, I'll tell you, though, that is it's wild. Just absolutely wild. Yeah. I mean, we all knew that this was going to be kind of one of those fun podcasts. We picked some stuff up. We talked about – I mean, you've heard me say for a few days now when we randomly talk about I don't even know really what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Right. I've said that, but you know, I think that this is one of those ones where I'm I want to join. I want to get everything set up. I want to buy some stuff.
Well, I mean,
to drive.
You hear it from him. I mean, it's really incredible on what you can get done in these games now. Don't you think?
Yeah. The fact that you can make a statement these pro drivers that are out here spending a grip of money every season, being able to try to run these events that, you know, you're watching on TV or you're watching on the weekends, and some kid could pop up with the sim time and the skill set in a game and earn the respect enough to the point where they're saying, hey, you got to come drive.
Yeah.
You're too good to be just doing it in the game. This is gonna work.
I'm blanking on the name and people are gonna crucify me or whatever, but the best FD F1 driver, what's his name?
Lewis Hamilton?
Max,
here we go again with this.
Okay, Verstappen. But he was saying that once, they're like, "What's next for you?" Because all you do is dominate, and he was saying that he wants to have his own sim team.
Yeah.
That's what he wants to do.
I want to have my own sim team.
And he wants to be the best sim racer in the world.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't know, but
it's wild.
It just goes to show he's the best driver in Formula One, and he's time to go virtual because there's more there.
It's wild. I mean, so the only thing I'll say is that I don't believe this. I don't believe that you're going to get to see as much stride and progress that FD made to get the sport recognized. I don't know, and I know esports is huge. But I don't know if the mainstream will ever connect with esports without being involved in esports. So what I mean is I don't know that you're going to get to a point where esports might be mainstream enough where it could be on TV, like, or have a lot like a live stream where people watch it just for the sake of the sport. There's plenty of people that watch Formula Drift.
I don't know about TV, but they're going to do it the same way Formula Drift does on YouTube.
I know, but what I'm saying is like I don't know that the mainstream person would carry over. I think if you're into gaming and stuff like that, it works and it carries over, no problem.
Oh, I see.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's super interesting to see how, like, if they're held in the same regard, like, could that possibly happen? And I've been to some of these e-gaming, the drifting competitions, and GridLife did one a couple years ago in Vegas, and it was pretty fun to watch.
You know what I think appeals more, though? I think since there's a wider reach, I think more people play video games. So I think that the appeal, like you said, you have to be a video game person to be into it. But there are more people who play video games than play soccer.
No doubt.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
It's dope. I'm super pumped. I really want to go spend a lot of money right now.
All right, cool.
So thanks for hanging out with us. We appreciate it. We don't forget to check out G's channels and his social media because, one, super cool dude. Two, you know what? Being able to kind of throw all this information out into somebody that, you know, we love the educational sense that we get, whether it be from YouTube influencers or from drivers or just for people that are out there throwing a lot of content online for free mm-hmm. without anything in return, no strings attached, just trying to spread racing automotive enthusiasm yep. throughout the space. And you know, G does that in a way that's incredible. From the simulator side and now also in real life. So make sure you follow him. Make sure you check that out. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back here next week when we do the podcast thing all over again. Take care. Peace.